Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
There's a lot of ways to think about a wake-up call, and that's what today's show is really all about. And in a moment, you're going to learn how you can get a wake-up call that sends a message every time your phone rings. It's all about diversity, and this is what it sounds like. Following on the topic of the show today, which has to do with what's happening to our various animal species around the world and in the nation here, we're all hearing about the fact that there are issues with global warming, that changes are happening in the environment, some of which are critical. Every time I hear what's happening, for example, to the chimpanzee populations, information coming from the Jane Goodall Institute and others, I just cringe. I hate to think of what has happened in my lifetime to the diversity of life on this planet. We are losing a lot of animals, and it is devastating to my soul, to be quite frank. These were my gifts. These were things that I adored and cherish. And unfortunately, as our population and our cultures and our global economies keep on growing, the animals are really taking a hit. Well, there's an organization that is really dedicated to bringing information forward about the critical need to maintain biological diversity. Nature Conservancy is one that really focuses on maintaining genetic integrity. But another one is the Center for Biological Diversity. And joining us now from California is Jeff Miller, who works with the center. Jeff, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you, Sydney.
Well, let's talk about the Center for Biological Diversity.
Well, we're a nationwide conservation group that formed in the 1990s, actually started in the 1980s as a group focused on biodiversity and endangered species issues in the southwestern U.S. And in the 90s expanded and now are working to protect endangered species and their habitats throughout North America, and actually have recently started doing a lot of international conservation work as well. And we work to protect, mostly to protect endangered species and focus on their habitats and the ecosystems that support them. And we work through policy, through endangered species law, through public education, and through scientific work to promote the protection of biological diversity.
It's a huge topic, and let's start out by just having you give us a sense of what's happening to biological diversity. Really, is it something that we need to be concerned about right now? We're hearing more about it, but what is the state of the art?
Well, we're in the grips currently of an extinction explosion that's unprecedented in natural history, and although extinction's natural phenomenon, current extinction rates are 100 to 10,000 times higher than natural background rates, and the current extinctions are definitely being brought about by humans. The other big change from some of the, you know, people have heard about the die off the dinosaurs or other extinctions. These extinctions are happening very quickly on a time scale where species cannot adapt and ecosystems can't adapt. The documented state of extinctions, the World Conservation Union looks at extinctions, and they've documented 850 species extinct from the wild since 1500 AD. That's when scientific records began. But this doesn't account for thousands and thousands of species that are disappearing before they can be described by science. And if you look at what the status worldwide, there's currently over 16,000 species around the globe that are threatened with extinction, and that's with only about 3% of the world's species having been assessed. So literally tens to hundreds of thousands of species that are facing extinction. And with rapid climate change, with global warming brought about by human actions, we're looking at really an unprecedented wave of extinctions as the climate starts to change more rapidly than animals can and plants can adapt or move.
You know, a huge part of the problem is the fact that there is such an interrelationship between all these different animals and their habitats. And as these changes begin to accelerate, that interdynamic is, from my perspective, the one that scares me the most. We have no concept of the effects of the demise of certain animal species and the rippling effects that that may have. Is anyone at this point beginning to get a handle on where that's headed?
No, but yeah, it is. I mean, some groups are trying to look at that, but it's, you know, obviously the natural world is a complicated system, and everything is interrelated. People have been telling us that for years, but I think we're getting to the point where, as we as humans start to feel some of the effects of losing some of these species, we're really going to start to understand that. And I noticed an article in the paper just yesterday that honeybees populations are vanishing around the country and actually around the world, and their star pollinators for our food crops are disappearing, and that's going to hit us hard. And that's when the biodiversity crisis is, I think, is really going to hit home for people, is when we start to see our ecosystems unravel and the natural systems we depend on for food, for clean water, for breathable air, et cetera, start to fall apart.
I just got off the phone with the executive director of the American Beekeepers Federation.
Oh, okay.
Because it is, this is an indication of unique problems. This affects our food crops in so many different ways. But then there's just the larger spectrum of biological diversity. One is the kind of the science, the integrity of maintaining these living systems. But there's also another side. And how much are you able to really celebrate and discuss and bring forward the importance of just the wonder that this diversity provides to us?
Well, we definitely try to do that. I mean, all of us are involved in the kind of work we do because we're just in awe of the natural world, and you know, we draw a lot of inspiration from it, and we want to protect it. We want it to be around for future generations. Our tagline is "Because life is good," and that really is the motivation for us to do the work that we do to make sure that these amazing plant and animal species and some wild habitats are around for the sake of the animals, but also for future generations to understand and enjoy them.
The thing that I'm beginning to think, I'm a dreamer. I hope for a better world, and I work for that. I actually think there's going to be a turnaround. I think we're beginning to turn a corner here, and that once again, people are going to want to really come back to nature. We left it for a period of time. We just launched off into hyper technology, and that's a fascinating zone. But I know I started out as a naturalist years ago in Minnesota when Yul Gibbons was writing about the wild asparagus, stalking the wild asparagus, and it was a book that was on the New York Times bestseller list. That it's been a long time since something like that has happened, but I personally think that people are going to, their soul is just going to demand that we re-embrace the importance and the significance of diversity. Let's talk about what the Center for Biological Diversity is doing to bring out your message and what you think is important for people to really take away from this conversation that they can begin to apply in their actual lives.
Well, like I said, our mission is to protect biodiversity and endangered species. We focus on recovering endangered species that are kind of indicator species of certain habitats. And we're very focused on protecting habitats for species because habitat loss is the number one cause of extinction. And, you know, no species can survive without its habitat intact. And we have a number of programs that we're working on. The probably most significant that we're working on right now is the climate issues, the global warming issues and rapid climate change. And we're one of the groups that's working to force the Bush administration to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and air pollution to protect ecosystems. And you were talking about, you know, a change coming. We had a fairly watershed event in this last year. We petitioned to list the polar bear under the Endangered Species Act because of melting of its ice habitat and the ice pack that it needs to hunt and survive on. And the Bush administration was forced for the first time ever to scientifically acknowledge that global warming is occurring and that it's human-caused. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has now proposed listing the polar bear as either endangered or threatened under the Endangered Species Act. And that proposal is currently being reviewed, and they're taking public comments. think that's one of those actions that we may look back, you know, if we are successful in addressing climate change and reducing our carbon emissions, that may be one of the actions that we look back on and say that really turned the tide. And, you know, sometimes it takes the cute poster species to get people to care, but I think you know, the polar bear has a big constituency out there of people who are paying attention and care what happens to it.
It's really important that these large, significant animals, which you refer to as charismatic megafauna, which is a wonderful term, really carry the message forward. And I think one of the important things for people to understand that for every animal and creature like that, there may be hundreds of others that we're not even aware of that are as well going the way of these creatures. And it's important for us to really expand our vision and our awareness to understand that the big creatures carry the message, but we really have to start looking at the ground and the earth and under the rocks and in the trees and the forests to realize that these trends are happening in all communities and habitats. Talk about some more of your work and some of the other animals and projects that you're working on.
Well, other things we do is you know, we work to protect desert ecosystems. Our group did start in the desert in the Southwest, so we're working to protect a lot of the public desert lands from abuses from off-road vehicle use, from cattle grazing, mining, etc. We have a forest program that's working to protect public forest lands and species that depend on them, such as the California spotted owl, the northern goshawk, the fisher in the Sierra Nevada, you know, species that are dependent on the few remaining old-growth forests we have left. And then we have an oceans program that's working to protect marine biodiversity, and we've pushed forward protection for a number of marine species, the orca, two populations of the orca, the beluga whale in Alaska, sea otters in Alaska, the northern right whale, and a number of other species. And then we also have a river campaign and focused on western rivers and working on restoring native fish and riparian corridors along western rivers. And then finally, we have an urban wildlands program that's working to protect endangered species and open space and really quality of life at the interface between our urban areas and our wild areas. So, you know, for example, in San Diego, you know, there's the multi-species conservation plan that's going forward. There, you know, dozens and dozens of species being affected by urban sprawl. Also in the San Francisco Bay Area, Tejon Ranch is a good example where we've got a campaign to try to protect the Tejon Ranch as a state or national park because of its incredible biodiversity. And really anywhere where you've got, you know, urban sprawl pressures bumping up against the last remaining habitats for some of our endangered species.
Let's say that there was someone who just recently came into this arena. Suddenly they began to hear the messaging and hadn't been that aware of it. It wasn't part of their worldview. How can you help them really accelerate their knowledge base, and what should they be paying attention to that you think is important?
Well, I mean, the message I always give people is, you know, I'm often asked, you know, we advocate for a lot of the unloved and unknown species. That's kind of been our trademark. I mean, you know, beetles and butterflies and coral species and, you know, some very obscure species, but that are important nonetheless and that are indicative of you know, their decline is indicative of problems with the health of ecosystems. And people often ask, well, why should I care if, you know, one little subspecies of frog goes extinct or if that lizard is no longer around? And, you know, ultimately it gets down to, you know, it's a moral and a philosophical issue, which is, you know, we humans are responsible for the changes and the habitat degradation that is driving these species extinct. And I think we have an obligation to do everything we can to protect these species and prevent them from going extinct. But just on a selfish worldview, you know, these species are the canary in the coal mine. And you know, when something starts to happen, you know, for example, a third of the world's amphibian species are in danger of extinction. And the extinctions are happening incredibly quickly. And that should be cause for concern for us. And essentially, ultimately, we're in line for the same fate if we don't make sure we have a healthy functioning planet. So.
I'm going to encourage people to actually become amateur field biologists. And a lot of people who aren't doing that, if they open up their eyes and if they're walking around and they see some little creature, they may just decide to figure out what that creature is. Get out a field guide, find out about it, and then just start to track on what information is available about its lifestyle, what it eats, what it does, its habits, its mating habits. And quite honestly, you could spend the rest of your life researching about any individual creature, any species, and it would be absolutely fascinating. And I think once that door is opened, you begin to see the wider picture that all of these creatures are miraculously wonderful, majestic creatures in their own right, even though they're not giant and big and phenomenal. And that all by itself, particularly in your backyard, would help people to become appreciative of the wider picture.
Absolutely. I mean, people really connect with animals, and there's a fascination. I mean, not just animals that are interesting or beautiful, but I think people have an innate connection to wildlife. And actually, on our website, we advocate for quite a number of endangered species, and some of them are pretty obscure or unknown, or aren't the more popular ones that are turned into stuffed animals. But nonetheless, very important and very interesting. And I encourage people to go to our website, and we have a lot of good information about endangered species in the U.S. And certainly, people can find local species in their area that are imperiled and learn about them.
And we are talking with Jeff Miller, who is with the Center for Biological Diversity. Jeff, why don't you give that website?
Yeah, the website is www.biologicaldiversity.org.
Now, there's one interesting thing that I've come across, and this actually is what caused me to give you a call, and that is the fact that when people go to that website, there's a unique feature that I think a lot of people are going to find very interesting, and why don't you talk about that?
Well, we, starting just before Christmas, we started offering free endangered species ringtones, and people can go to our website and download the calls and sounds of endangered species and use it as their ringtone for their cell phone. And we've got a couple dozen rare and endangered owls from around the world, about a dozen North American frogs and toads, a couple marine mammals, which are really popular, the orca and the beluga whale. We've got a Mexican wolf and some South American birds. And we've got plans to add dozens more species in the future. But as far as we know, it's the only free endangered species ringtone website in existence.
Well, let me tell you something. I went to the website. I had some of these, quite a number of them, as a matter of fact, sent to me through the website, and I have them now available on my phone. And here's what's really fun, and that is that when someone calls me now, they may hear an orca whale sounding in my, they just hear it in their environment, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to go, "What in the world is that?" And that's the question that you want them to ask.
Exactly.
This is the wake up call.
Exactly. It's one thing to tell people about endangered species or have them go read about it at your website or, to give them the numbers about how many species are endangered. But it's another thing if people actually hear the sound of the animal. I think it's going to catch people's attention. It's going to get people's interest. And if you go to the website, you can also download fact sheets about each of the species. And then also, with just a couple clicks, you can get involved in protecting in our initiatives to protect those very species.
It's a great idea. I have about 10 on my cell phone, and every day I can change it depending on my own particular mood. And I'm just waiting actually to head out into the world here and have my cell phone go off, and then I get a chance when people say, "What is that?" to talk about it. It's an opening that we otherwise perhaps don't have. It's a great idea. Really, really a great idea. I commend you for that.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, it's also been very popular. I think we've had 24,000 people download the ringtone so far, and the orca is far and away the most popular, but there are some Southern California species on there. People want to, and actually, you can either get that off our website, biologicaldiversity.org, or you can go to rareearthtones.org, which is a little easier to remember for the ringtone.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the Center for Biological Diversity, other events that they can look forward to in the upcoming months?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you go on our website, you can join, you can get involved in volunteer events. You can get on our action alert list, which basically when there's issues or comment periods, or you know, we need letters written, or people to come to a hearing on endangered species issues, you'll get an email from us. There's also some information for kids on endangered species and on, you know, educational materials.
Well, it's a huge topic, and we can barely touch the surface here. At some point here, we'll contact you again and do an in-depth show. I love to do that, to really, really go into these topics in depth. But at this point, it's a teaser here, and I encourage people to go to the website. Jeff, why don't you give that website again?
The Biological Diversity website is biologicaldiversity.org, and for the ringtones, the wildlife ringtones, it's rareearthtones.org.
We're talking with Jeff Miller, who's with the Center for Biological Diversity. I wish you great success in all that you do and all the people in your organization. It's fascinating. I want to thank you, Jeff, for lending your voice here on the Wild Side News.
Thank you very much, Sydney.
So each of us must decide where we fit in this grand play of life. Are we an actor, a lead, a stand-in, or an extra? Are we saying our words, or writing the script, directing the action? Are we a critic, or a patron? Or maybe we never even get in line. I always like to know that everything that I am was born in truth in the heat and cauldron of a distant star, that in some spectacular moment exploded into an infinitum starbits, that traveled through time and space and finally came all together on this little planet Earth. We are all the stuff of stars. The question is, what do we choose to do with it? This is Sydney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again next Thursday or any time on the archives when your voice of the Earth rings out around the world here on the Wild Side News.
Oh, my God.